And I want to try to present something to you, which is MS Lamito. I might not be the best person or the best vehicle for explaining it in a clear and comprehensive way. So therefore, if it's something that you find trouble connecting to, so don't blame the topic, just blame the, shoot the messenger, as they say, not the message itself. I mean, they say don't shoot the messenger, is the line of the Gemara, but in this case, you can shoot the messenger. Okay. The basic premise of what I want to talk about, and again, we're talking about a topic that we can't really understand. Whenever we try to get a deeper glimpse into Hashem, into how He runs the world, so we always run the risk. I think it's logical to assume that God, as an infinitely intelligent being who's infinitely more intelligent than us, so just like if you're speaking to a professor who you assume to be much more intelligent than you, and therefore you go into the conversation with a certain amount of assumption that there might be things he says that you don't understand, it doesn't mean that they're wrong, you might just don't understand them, so I would imagine that that same respect would be accorded to Hashem, and obviously exponentially greater, that there certainly are things that Hashem does that are not only things that we don't understand, that we can't understand yet, but things that may just be beyond our ability to understand. And yet, at the same time, the Rambam tells us, in the end of, I always get mixed up with the Hilchos Tumor or Hilchos Me'ila, the Rambam writes there that even though Tamei Mitzvos and the like are things that are beyond our comprehension, but Hashem also gave us a mind, and therefore He obviously was challenging us to try to understand. If there was no possible way to understand Hashem, so He wouldn't give us a mind that could even conceive of the fact, or conceive of the possibility of understanding Hashem. The fact that we could conceive of the fact of understanding Hashem seems to indicate to us that might be something that it's worthwhile to pursue. And that's certainly what the Rambam suggests, that it's worthwhile to try to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So with that understanding and realizing that our minds are feeble, we're going to try to understand things to a degree. And the basic yisod of what I want to try to talk about today, and really the entire topic, can be understood in one line. And that is that we have to try to accept that there's a spiritual realm that is beyond what we can perceive in the world. It's really the first step to really understanding any inner depth of reality, is to be able to understand that there are things that are beyond what we perceive. Now, for us modern people, that's not so complicated, it's not such a challenge, because once science uncovered the microscopic world, so we became comfortable with the fact that there could be things in reality that we do not perceive, and yet they are true. If I told you that this desk was actually not solid, it was actually made up of lots of little cells that are all moving around really, really quickly, so that would be something that you would think is impossible, because it's very solid. And yet we know that there are many things. There are microscopic organisms all over my hands and all over the shtender and all around us in the air. I mean, there are internet waves and radio waves going through the air right now, and yet we don't perceive any of them. If we don't have a tool that can pick them up, we can go our whole life and not realize that there are all these waves and sounds that are all going on around us, and we don't perceive them at all. So it's not really so hard for us to understand that there's a reality beyond what we perceive. And yet, at the same time, it is, for some reason. The Ramban, famous line here from the Ramban in Vayikra, he's talking about certain chachmos that are regarding things that we don't perceive in reality. And he says, "Ki hayinu tzrichim," he says, "V'lo uchal lefaresh." I'm like eight words or so into the quote here. "V'lo uchal lefaresh." I can't really explain this to you, says the Ramban. I don't think he means that he doesn't know how to. I think he means that he doesn't feel comfortable. Right? He says these lines, words before that, "Rimzei HaTorah, Lemeivin Sodom," these are secrets to those who understand, "V'lo uchal lefaresh," and I can't say anymore. "Ki hayinu tzrichim lachsom pi hamizchachmim." And we really need to muzzle the mouth of people who think that they're smart, the teva, scientists, "hanimshachim achrei hayivani," that are drawn after the Yavani. Who's the Yavani? The Greek guy. Who's the Greek guy? Aristotle. "Asher hichish kol davar zulasi hamorgashlo." Suppose the Rambam, who refers to Aristotle by name, the Ramban just refers to him as that Greek guy who denied anything that he couldn't feel. Anything he couldn't touch, he denied. "The hegis daito," and he was so arrogant, lachshov hu v'talmidu av harishayim, and therefore he and his evil students thought, ki kol inyan shelo hisig olav hu v'svaraso eino emes. Anything that he himself couldn't perceive was obviously not true. That was Aristotle's shita. And the Ramban here is attacking Aristotle for believing that only things that I can understand are true. And I'm sure that we've all met people like this, arrogant people, who they assume that they know everything. And the minute that they don't understand something, so they just say, oh, it's not true. And humility obviously requires of a person, it's obviously more of a challenge the more intelligent you are, and the more you come across things and you understand them right away, so then more of a challenge it is that when you stumble across things that you don't understand right away, that you have a dismissive attitude to say, oh, it's probably not true. And the Ramban here tells us that that's certainly not the attitude that we need to take if we want to try to understand God. Because again, if you think God is just some guy with a long white beard sitting on a throne up in heaven, so then it's true, so he's probably a fool. But if you realize that God is a being of infinite wisdom, so then not only is it likely that he understands things and he's much more complex than we can understand, I think we would actually prefer that. And I think it's a famous line from the Kotzker, who said, why would I be interested in believing in a God that I can understand? In other words, what makes him God if I, puny me, am able to understand him? So on the one hand, we don't want to take the approach of like copping out and just saying like, oh, we don't understand. On the other hand, we do have to have the humility to realize that there are things that we don't exactly perceive. So my basic thesis for you tonight and for the rest of the Shirim is that there is a truer essence or a truer reality that is completely spiritual. And we, however, are forced to exist in a physical existence and therefore have a tremendous trouble perceiving and understanding that more spiritual existence. Every physical existence, by definition of it being physical, is going to be restrictive. And because it's restrictive, we are not able to see beyond the physical world. However, if we are able to figure out a way to transcend to some degree, or shed the physical to some degree, some small degree, even a tiny amount, so then we will be able to unite more with who we really are. Meaning, if we and all of existence is really more spiritual than when we perceive it, so then if we're able to just get beyond the physical perspective, even a little bit, not completely, that's certainly not, we're not going to be able to do, but even a slight greater perception, so then we will be more knowledgeable about ourselves and reality. So that's what we want to try to do. We want to try to see if we can understand reality and ourselves at a slightly deeper level. I think this is true about people. People exist on a deeper plane than what we perceive. And that's something that I think we recognize. We meet people, and we realize that there's something deeper there than just who you see on the outside. You know, it's like a high school perspective, like you judge a person only by what you see. And then as you get to know people on a deeper level, you realize that there's much more there than just the physical person. I think it's true about the world around us. And like I said already, science has already opened that door to us to realize that there's a deeper reality here than what we see. And I think that people don't truly connect to Judaism because they actually get very stuck on the external parts of things that are really very deep. Meaning they look at a shofar as just some animal horn that some guy is blowing into and making noises, and they don't ever get any deeper perspective of a shofar. And therefore, even things that are religious, they have a very superficial perspective of them. So we really just would like a little slightly deeper perspective on life. And I think, and we'll talk about this not this week, but maybe in future weeks, how I think Jewish life is really constructed to give us a deeper perspective on life. So we're going to try to peer a little bit more into that spiritual existence that I think is there and try to understand it. So I'm beginning with a quote from the Zohar because it adds like a nice like Kabbalistic feeling to everything that we're doing, and then like, you know, we'll turn off the lights and light the candles. Rav Yitzchak and Rav Yehuda have a yasve leila chada vilon beoraisa. Rav Yitzchak and Rav Yehuda, I obviously don't study Zohar, I obviously saw this quoted in another sefer. Rav Yitzchak and Rav Yehuda were once sitting at night and they were learning beoraisa. They were learning Torah, which is interesting because when you see it here in the Aramaic and you also have the contrast here of them learning at night and learning oraisa, what word do you see in the word oraisa? Or, and there's that nice contrast there. They're sitting in the dark, but they are enlightening themselves with Torah. Amar Rav Yehuda, Hataninon dekadbora kutshabrichu olma. We've been taught
that when Hashem created the world, Ovid Olma Tata Kigavna de Olma Ilah, He made a lower world, an Alma Tata Kigavna, in the form of an Alma Ilah, of an upper world. Ukla Da Bekabel Da. And He made all, Kula Da, and all of this is Lekabel Da. Makbil. Makbil in Hebrew means parallel. Parallels this. I put it in Hebrew for you. V'yasa kol zeh keneged zeh.
And when He made everything, He made a parallel. So what the Zohar tells us here is that Hashem, when He created our lower world, He also created a higher world that parallels our world. Our world, according to the Zohar, reflects an upper world. Our world parallels an upper world, which is more elevated, obviously, than our world. And therefore, our world is, well, our world parallels an upper world. But even that world is not the ultimate reality, because above that world, we're going to have to define what that means in a second, in a world, above our existence is a more spiritual existence, an upper existence. And even that is itself a lower world, a more physical world, to a more elevated world. And so it continues ad infinity, meaning that there are worlds that, from our perspective, is more spiritual, but yet, in comparison to a world above it, it is the physical manifestation of a more spiritual world. And what basically emerges is that in creation, Hashem took from Himself the ultimate spirituality, and there was a multi-stage emanation from Himself down until eventually our world emerged. Each lower world was a more physical, let's try to say it in a slightly different way. In order for there to be a world that we can exist in as physical beings, so Hashem, this is an idea called Tzimtzum that's mentioned sometimes in Kabbalah and Chassidus, Hashem had to dumb down, which is a bad word to use, but we'll use it, dumb down or make more physical something very, very spiritual, until finally it became physical enough that it emerged as the world that we have around us. But the important point here is that each resulting world is not an independent reality. It's not like one world created another world. It's that Hashem created giluyim, manifestations of something very, very pure, until it finally was mitgashem, like from the word gashmius, it emerged here in its physical form. I know that sounds like very esoteric right now, but I'm going to be talking about it from different angles, so I hope by the time we're done, everything will sort of come together. Basically, as each world emerges from its source, so it assumes a less elevated and more material. Those two things go hand in hand. And therefore, our world is the least elevated or most physical expression of not only the world above it, but of all of the subsequent worlds that are above that. And what that means is that every creation that we encounter in this world, and our whole world in total, has a more spiritual counterpart that also exists in an elevated, we can call it a parallel universe or a parallel world. Again, it's not like a twin. It's not a separate creation, but it is the source of our creation. Let me try to say that in terms that we can address. Sometimes if you know, it's hard for you perhaps because you don't have children yet, but when you have a child, if you have a person that you love very dearly and very intensely, so you are familiar or you've come across that feeling of not being able to express your feelings in words. Your feelings are, for our muscle right now, spiritual. You have all of this feeling about a person. And then when you try, like, let's say you had an amazing experience. You're trying to explain it to someone. So you're sitting there, like, out of breath, like, saying, like, it was amazing. It was great. It was, like, exhilarating. Why are you struggling with the words? Because that feeling, when you try to concretize it, so it becomes now expressible, but it loses part of its essence because it's become physical. To say I love you to a person will always fall short of what you truly, if you mean it, will always fall short of what you truly feel, But if you don't express it in words, so you can't share it with the person. So whenever you have an idea, if you really understand something, when you try to explain it to someone, you want to explain it because you want to express it. But at the same time, even after expressing it, I even feel this right now, even after expressing it, you've lost some of the feeling because it's something that you chap, but it's hard to say it in words. I hope you've had experiences like this. And then you'll be able to understand that this, as things get more concretized, as they become more physical, so they're relatable, but they lose a lot of their power and a lot of their essence. So our world has its source. So again, there was this great feeling, to use our mashal, and God wanted to express it in a physical way so that there could be a physical existence. So he had to continue to make it more physical, more dumbed down, more constricted, until it finally emerged as an actual physical thing. But as you realize, that physical thing, and that's the point I'm trying to make, it's not that the physical thing is paralleled by something. It is something deeper. It's just here, in this world, it can only be revealed in a very physical form. That's the rules of the arena that it's being expressed in. But it's an expression that it itself is really deeper at the same time. So there's actually concurrent existences that are going on at the same time. And everything in our world is linked in its essence to things above. The Derech Hashem says this. I have a quote for you here. V'hinei min ha'ikarim ha'gedolim shebiyadeinu b'inyin zehu. The Ramchal tells us, shekineged kol ma shenimtza b'nimtzayim ha'shvelim, everything that's found down here in this lowly existence, nimtzayim l'mala kochos nivdalim. At the same time, there exists in an upper world transcendent forces. Shemehem mishtalshelim v'yotzim. And the things in our world are actually mishtalshel. They come down. They emanate from there, and they come out from there. V'nimtzayim ha'kochos ha'im shrashim l'nimtzayim ha'shvelim elu. And therefore, those forces in an upper existence are actually the roots for things that exist in our world. V'nikshar mzeh b'zeh ketabos ha'shalshelos. And they're actually connected, is like links in a chain. Okay, so we've clarified that everything in our world materializes until it's able to exist in our physical world. I want to just clarify that with one or two quotes. And again, I know I've said this a few times, but I think the more I say it in different words, the more it'll become clear. People, a lot of times, think that there are spiritual things in this. There are things in this world that are almost like ambassadors for things in a higher existence. Like that there's like, you have your counterpart in Shemayim. And what we're saying is that, let's say you're a fish, okay? You're a fish right now. And I stick my finger down into the water. Okay? I can't put my whole body into the water because I can't breathe underwater. I can't exist in the fish's world. But I stick my finger in. Now the fish only sees my finger. Okay, maybe he sees like a certain like image above the water, like a shadowy image. But he only sees the finger. But the finger is only the very tip of me. I'm really much, much bigger. And I'm much more powerful than just my finger. But I can't be in his world. So only my finger is there. But my finger is actually, it's not like my finger is like a represent, like I took a little mini me and I stuck it in the water. And my finger is the mini me. And there's me up on the sand and then there's the little me in the water. No, it's all me. It's just the only part that can be in the water is my finger. Okay? The rest of my body is like allergic to water. So it can't be in there. Only my finger. When something is mitgale in this world, it's not that it has a counterpart, an ambassador in heaven who's like looking out for it, like a little angel and saying like, no, don't do that. Yeah, do that. That thing up there and you down here are the same thing. It's just the part of you that can be manifest in this world is the physical you. That's the only thing that can be mitgale in the world. I know I'm going to run out of time, so I think I'm going to skip some of the quotes. But I have two quotes here from the Shirei Das, a very, very deep sefer. You'll take a look at it if you want. And everything that exists in our world also exists in upper worlds. And the same thing is true the opposite. This I'll quote from the Medrash Rabba. Call, second to last source. Kol asher yesh b'mala, yesh b'mata. Everything that's in Shemayim is also down here. Meaning every force that Hashem created in Shemayim, He created a physical giloy of it in this world. So there are things that we see as very physical, mundane things in this world, but we don't realize that those are just the physical manifestation of kochos that are much, much more powerful in Shemayim. Okay. I want to try to clarify this a little bit. What does this mean, upper world? So we're going to talk about something else for a second, and hopefully it'll come back. Upper worlds don't really mean upper. Like, olamos elyonim don't mean upper. Like, what does upper mean, if you think about it? Upper is a direction in our world. Like, upper meaning like on the roof of a building? No. I mean like in the sky. Oh, you mean like the clouds? Because we've all been in clouds. We've been in airplanes. The clouds, what, the clouds are less physical than the ground? That's also physical. No. I mean in space. I mean, space is also a creation. If you have a scientist and he goes into space, so he's able to analyze everything in space. There's physical properties up there also. What do we mean upper? Like, as kids, we think of Hashem being like up in Shemayim. But obviously, why is he in Shemayim any more than he's right here? Why is an upper world upper any more than it's lower? So it's not upper and it's not lower. There's no, we're not making a spatial statement, like where it is, when we say an upper world. An upper world is right here. Like, the world of the angels up in heaven is right here. So what does that mean? I know we have trouble relating to that. That's why we use words like up above. But up and above only really is a spiritual world. Reality, again, we are forced into a certain perspective of reality because of our own limitations. So we only see certain things. Like I already told you, you don't see all the radio waves that are in the room. If you are colorblind, so you don't see any color, even though obviously there is color in the world. If you are unable to smell, so there could be a really nice smell in the room right now, and it exists, really exists, but you don't perceive it because you don't have the ability to perceive it. So, you know, the best way to do this, there's a very famous book called Flatlands, if anyone's read it. It's a really fascinating, mind-blowing book. I'm going to talk to you about a book written in the 1800s called Flatlands, but there's a yesod of that book which is very, very important. I'm going to try with the time that I have to do it. Let's imagine, because we can't really imagine anything beyond our own dimension and our own existence, and that's what we're trying to understand. So I want to try to give you a mushel, hopefully we'll help you understand it, but you're going to need to be a little bit creative for a second. Let's talk about a two-dimensional world, okay? Two dimensions means, right? Like one dimension. Oh, we don't have. One dimension is a line. And then when you pull a line in a 90-degree angle, so you get a square. That's two dimensions, right? There's two dimensions, forward and backward, or forward and sideways, okay? Like north, south, east, west, but no up and down. So like imagine, for instance, like this piece of paper. Now the piece of paper is obviously really three-dimensional because it doesn't only go in this way. It also goes up and down. It's just it's very, very thin. But forget about that. Let's imagine that the paper was absolutely flat, meaning there was no height to it at all, okay? And we have on our little flat world, this is the world. We have a triangle who lives in our world. Okay, everyone sees the triangle? He lives in our nice little flat world over here. Now remember, he's really flat like this. You can't look at him like this, because, okay, this is how he exists. He's totally flat. Like if you wanted to like put him in jail, you would just draw a circle around him, because he can't step over that line, because he's flat. Okay, now imagine we had like two triangles, and let's say they're looking at each other, okay? They have like little eyeballs on their tips. And they're looking at each other. So what does this triangle see when he sees this? What does he see? Try to get yourself like on that level there. What does he see? He sees a straight line. Why? Why does he see a straight line? Let's say here's our triangle. And it's not like an exact triangle. Well, get a triangle here. Here we go. Here's a triangle, sort of. Okay? This is like basically a triangle. Oh, I guess I could fold it like this, and now we'll have a triangle. I never did so good in geometry class. Having trouble with it. Okay. We have a triangle here, okay? Now here's our flat triangle. Now when you look at him, if you are completely on his level, he's completely eye level with you, so all you see is a line. Imagine there was like a little bit of like fog. So if there was a little fog, the line you would see would actually be darker in the center and a little bit shadier on the sides. Why? Because the center is closest to you. Now, you don't really have so much depth perception when you're stuck in two dimensions. But if you're looking at this thing straight, you see a line because he starts from here and he goes to here. And all you can see, you can't see this depth here because you're two-dimensional. You're flat. You're in this flat world with him. So, does everyone understand what I'm saying? When you see him coming, you only see a flat line, the cross-section from here to here. Okay? He's stuck in this flat world. And he moves around, okay? He's moving around this flat world. Now, let's say we wanted to meet him and introduce ourselves to him. So now you realize he's stuck in this flat world. Now, we are a three-dimensional thing. We're like a tennis ball. And the tennis ball comes up, and he floats around in three dimensions. So he doesn't have to be on the table, because he's not flat. He doesn't have to be on the flat sphere. So he comes up over here, and he says, like, hello to the triangle. And the triangle has no idea where he is, right? Why? Because the triangle can't see him. He's above. So the circle starts saying, like, do you see me? And the triangle says, what do you mean, do I see you? I only see in two dimensions. I don't see up. I only see straight. I only see lines. My whole life is just seeing lines. So he says, well, do you see me? So he says, I can't see you. Where are you? So he goes, I'm up. So what does the flat triangle say? What's up? He has no idea what up is. His whole existence is just... And he's standing right over him. He actually could, like, poke him in the belly. And like, there's something poking him, like, from with inside him. Like, quickly he gets scared and he runs into a building and he closes, like, the door around him. And now he's surrounded by the circle. And he says, like, I got away from that ball, that noise. And the noise is standing over him and saying, like, hello. He's, like, looking around, like, how did he get in here? Because I just see the circle around me. I don't see anything else. How is he in here with me? So... I'll give you one other mushel if you're following what I'm talking about. Imagine this ball wants to introduce himself. So he passes through the plane. What does the triangle see as he passes through? He sees a line that gets wider and wider and wider until the circle, fattest part of the circle, and then it gets skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. Because he can only see cross sections. Because he can only see two dimensions. Like a sphere is lots and lots. Again, we're obviously already not explaining it perfectly because there is no width to the circle, to the sphere.
How can the triangle in the second dimension see anything? Because if you see just a line, that line has to have at least some height to it.
So that's what I'm saying. It's not a perfect mushel. But you get the idea though what I'm talking about. It's not a perfect mushel. You're right. Now, this triangle is obviously very frustrated, but guess who's also frustrated? The sphere. Because the sphere can't really explain himself. Because all he keeps saying to this flat thing is like, what do you mean? Just like, go outside. Like, I'm just right above you. So that is what scientists refer to as the fourth dimension versus our dimension. Right here in our world, there could be another dimension. Okay, but where is it? And there could be this voice who's like looking into us right now. Well, where is he? He's not in the room. So he says, what do you mean? I'm just like right outside. Like I'm right next to you. I'm just like right outside. I'm another, right? We went from a line, one direction, to two directions, and now we know of three directions. So what if there's a fourth direction? So we're all saying like, what do you mean? Where does it go? There only is forward, backwards, side, and up and down. Where is that extra? Where's that right angle that you're going into? And just like the second dimensional creature who's stuck in two dimensions can't even begin to understand, like, what does that mean to go up? There are only two directions, forward and backwards and sideways. So we struggle with the same thing. But other olamos, when we say that they're upper, it doesn't mean that they're up there. It means that they're right here. It's just that they're in a dimension beyond what we can perceive. Okay. So whenever we talk about other olamos, our olam, our world is actually called olam because it comes from the word ne'alam. In order for it, which means hidden, in order for it to manifest itself, Hashem had to hide all of the more spiritual manifestations of it in order so that it could finally become physical. So whenever we speak about like the world of the angels, or like upper dimensions, or olamos elyonim, they're all right here. They're just beyond where we can perceive. Like this idea that like you and your wife are really like united, like you share the same soul. I actually saw this in a secular book. A guy was talking about relationships and how sometimes you meet a person, you feel like there's a connection to them, even though like you've never met each other before. And he says that it could be that in another dimension we're connected. Now, what does that mean that we're connected? Like, imagine again that like flat guy here. Imagine I took my hand and went like this into his world. What would he see? he would see five totally connected points. And if I would try to convince him, like, no, no, they're really all part of the same thing, he would say, like, what are you talking about? Like, they're not connected. But that's just because he can't see out where there's a connection point. So it could be that we are connected on some level. Maybe when we're told that all of Klal Yisrael is guf echad, that's not just like a nice, like, mussar idea. Maybe it means that there is some type of connection between us that we just aren't able to perceive because the connection point exists beyond what we're able to see in the world, beyond our own reality. The take-home point for this, and I'm going to explain it in terms of one topic, and I'm going to end with that, even though it's not going to end in a minute. I'm not done in like 3 minutes, but basically the main point here is that when things came into existence in our world, so we are able to relate to them, we can touch them, we can feel them, we can smell them, we can taste them, but because of that, we only see a part of them. And everything that exists, both the world, both creatures, have a much deeper element to them. There's so much more beyond that little tip that you see sticking out from the water. There's a whole iceberg down there. But it's just someplace that you can't get to. And you can't have a perception of that reality. And I think that if we start to look at the world as being a very partial picture of true reality, so it allows us to start relating to people and to things as having a lot more significance than we sometimes treat them with. And I want to talk about it in one context, but I think it applies in a lot of contexts. I want to talk about it in terms of your soul and in terms of death. You know, like as kids, we're always told that our soul like goes up to Shemayim, and then it comes back down, and then it goes back up, and it goes back down. So we've already clarified that there's no going up and down, right? The soul exists here, but here, it just is a more physical manifestation of the same thing that exists in all of these greater and all of these further dimensions and all of these greater universes. Your soul needs a connection point in order to be able to be expressed here. And I like the mashal that I've read and that I like to always share is like a microscopic organism in a wedding, at a wedding hall, or in a museum. Imagine you're like a tiny little ant. Or you know what, even to make the mashal better, imagine you're a amoeba. Or you're some tiny, tiny little creature. A tiny little louse, I think is the singular for a lice. You're a tiny little piece of lice, a louse. And you are walking on the floor of a wedding hall. And there's a huge wedding going on. And the band is playing and people and there. What do you see as that little louse? Let's say you walk up to my foot and you see the bottom of my foot. Now, the bottom of my foot is like this huge, huge black thing, okay? Right here, you're, well, white, I guess. You're looking at this tiny little thing, and you're in this wedding hall, and there's tons going on. But what do you really perceive as an ant or as a louse? Very, very little. You could put that little tiny microscopic organism on the corner of a Picasso painting, and all he sees is like a huge red, huge something red. Now, we realize that's one tiny part of a pixel. I know you don't use pixels, but you know, for us nowadays, that's one little pixel in this huge painting. And certainly the louse has no appreciation for how amazing the wedding is. He doesn't see the flowers, he doesn't see the band, he doesn't taste the food. All he sees is like the bottom of my black Shabbos shoe. That's a little bit of the perspective, I think, of how we go through existence. We are seeing things. And for us, it's very beautiful. There's lots of colors. There's lots of tremendous things that we see. But if we realize that we're this tiny little ant seeing the bottom of a shoe in a huge wedding hall, so there's so much more to reality than what we're really perceiving. Our soul, and that's what I was talking about, it manifests itself in so many areas, this perspective. But in terms of looking at your soul, or when you meet a person, they are so much bigger than what you see. The soul, you know, this is like a misconception. The soul is not in your body. It's not like you got a body and then Hashem took a soul and he put it in your body. Your body is your soul. It's just a very physical manifestation of it that can be manifest here in this world. But your body and you is really like this tiny, tiny, tiny little piece of this huge, colossal thing, which is the real you, but is too overpowering to be expressed in a physical world. So it's constricted and constricted and constricted, and Micah comes out. But Micah, with all of his complexity and his sophistication, is really a tiny little smidgen of who Micah really is as soon as you leave that physical existence. Once you open up all those dimensions, so Micah is so much larger than that. Like if that little louse could just grow a little bit and see, whoa, this is really a huge event. Sometimes because you're so small, you don't even realize how big it is. You know, that little ant walking, he doesn't realize when he's walking through, like, you know, a football stadium, there's a football game going on. He doesn't realize the enormity of the place that he is. People often will say, like, I have a soul. So you have to realize, like, you don't have a soul. You are a soul. You don't have a soul put in you. You are a soul. It's just, this is the way we can express it. This is the I love you, which is really expressing so many more feelings and so much, much more depth. It's like a tiny, tiny tip of your soul. And that's the way that you look at life. Death, then, is a very, very interesting perspective. Death is just the cutting off of that little tiny tip of the soul that's revealing itself in our world. It's like the severance of the gilui, the manifestation, from the essence, from what's really there. This is a fascinating Gemara in Brachos, that like sometimes you read a Gemara like this and you'd be like, oh, these rabbis, well, they're superstition. But when you read it now, so I think it gives a little bit of a different perspective. Tanur Rabbanan, the Gemara in Brachos tells us, if you have a dream of a mace in your house, mace babayas, shalom babayas. So what that really means is that there's going to be good in your house. Okay? Ochel b'shasa babayas, if people, you have a dream and people are eating in your house, simin yafa labayas, that's a good sign for your house. But natal kelim in abayas, if all of a sudden the shoe disappears, sorry, the kelim disappear, simin ra labayas, that's a bad sign for your life, for your house, for your life. Targum Rav Papa, and Rav Papa said, you know what it means if the kelim disappear? Misana v'sandala. It means the shoe or the sandal. Rav Papa, very weird Gemara. Gemara says, if you have a dream, and all of a sudden your property starts to disappear from your house, it's a bad sign. Rashi, I think, says you're going to die. And Rav Papa says, by the way, you should know, it doesn't mean all your belongings. Dafka means your shoe. So what are the superstitious, you know, rabbis of antiquity talking about here? What's going on? So the imagery is very clear, I think, I hope, with our background. What does the shoe represent? The shoe is the bottom part of your clothing. It's the bottom of you. It's the lowest part of you that makes contact with the ground. What's the imagery of the shoe falling off? The imagery of the shoe falling off is death. It's that lowest, most material part of the body that's just being severed and staying down and no longer connected to the great mass of your body. And that is what the Gemara says is reflective of death. That death is the severance of the most physical, lowest expression of you in this world that is now just being left in the world, dropped into the ground, put into the physicality, so that the soul doesn't go back up into heaven. Heaven, which is right here, just beyond our view, is where the soul always was. It just had a way to express itself in the world. It's like that finger being stuck into the water and then being taken out again. It doesn't touch or affect the soul itself. The soul is who you are, and that's the big mass that exists. What does it mean on Shabbos that we get into Neshama Yisera? What Hashem like sends down via like his like tube, like a little extra Neshama that goes and now you have like this extra Neshama. There's new extra Neshama for Shabbos. All it means is that a person's perception of the real them is more natural, is more clear than it normally is. Normally, our perception is so connected to the physical. And as I've said, if we're able to somehow get a slightly deeper perspective on our neshama, what's our neshama? Our neshama just means the full us. So if we're able to get a slightly deeper perspective, the neshama yaseira just means we have a greater perspective. That's why Shabbos is called the Day of Neshama. The Yom HaDinishmasa, the Zohar refers to Shabbos. Because Shabbos is a time where we are able to get a deeper perspective of the more of who we are. And I'll end with 45 seconds of Musar, which I'm not saying it b'tor Musar, but I'm saying it in terms of just like when you learn something, so realizing how it impacts you. We have to realize that the whole world that we exist in and the whole reality that we have, like I said, is a physical form of a reality that's so much greater. What a shame it is for a person to invest all of their efforts and all of their consciousness on trying to make this greater and ignoring what they really are. A person who only focuses on the shoe and doesn't realize that there's a whole body above the shoe is like that ant who's, you know, what's more geschmack? To be big and eating at the wedding and dancing at the wedding and hearing the music? Like, what do you think, when there's an ant in a wedding hall and there's a band playing, what do you think he hears? He probably just hears a loud, deafening noise because it's just too powerful for his ears to start to hear the beautiful sounds of the music. And yet, when you're bigger and you're connected more to that larger world, so you can hear beautiful music. Every hana that we have in this world is dumbed down because we're experiencing it on a physical level. If we could experience it on its more elevated level, it will be so much richer, so much deeper, and so much greater. And that's true for punishment and pain, and it's true for enjoyment and hana. Everything we experience in this world is a watered down physical gilui of things that are much, much deeper. Next time you daven, next time you look at a person, try to think of them as not only as a physical body, and not only as a body that has a soul put in it, but as actually a huge edifice that stands behind the thing that you see. When you start to realize that the people you interact with, the things that you interact with, are really tremendously colossal spiritual entities. It's just that they need to be squeezed and constricted in order so that they can reveal themselves in a physical world. So it'll hopefully open our eyes to wanting and for running like crazy after anything that can give us a deeper perspective of reality. So Mirtz Hashem, I want to next week is Purim, so maybe after the Suda we can really talk about things. But to next week or next time we have an opportunity to learn together. So I want to try to take this and use it to understand time a little bit and to understand other things that we try to do, whether it's Torah, whether it's other experiences that we have, Yom Tovim, in order to try to get a deeper perspective. All right, guys, thanks for the time. Have a good night.